This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and thanks for downloading the Scotland Outdoors podcast. I'm Helen Needham. In this edition, I chat to author and photographer Jeff Allen. Jeff wrote a book called The Scottish Bothy Bible, which was published a couple of years ago, showcasing our network of free-to-use mountain huts here in Scotland. He's just published a sequel to that very successful book called Scottish Bothy Walks, and I met up with him to find out more.
I've met you in Edinburgh, which may seem like the wrong place to meet, actually, because you're writing about bothies, which are mainly in far-flung places in the Highlands of Scotland. But I thought, actually, a lot of the time when people are thinking about going to bothies, they might be in a place like Edinburgh or Glasgow or some place of population.
Yes, I was very fortunate to be able to have a day off yesterday and went up to Rhibowen and the Aviemore and got a stomp up to the Bothy and up to Meal Buckle, I haven't been out for weeks, obviously with the storms and everything, so the contemplation of going away for the weekend in Scotland is fantastic, from Glasgow and Edinburgh, just so many possibilities of places to go, and hopefully the new book will provide some inspiration.
And Edinburgh is actually the place where it all began for you.
I actually come from Suffolk, but I came up to Edinburgh to study geography, actually, at the university. And I had never heard of bothies before I arrived. I went to the club Hogmanay meet in their hut in Glenlicht, and just couldn't believe it. My family, we used to go hostelling and stuff, so it was part of that culture. And I just had my epiphany moment, and I've been bothying ever since. We went up to this Bothy Camban on the Belak into Glen Affric, and it's amazing, wild location. When someone told me there was a whole network of these bothies dotted around Scotland, I thought, wow. And yeah, I've just been bothying ever since.
Give us a bit of background on bothies, because they're not necessarily purpose-built for providing shelter for mountaineers and walkers.
The key thing is that, to explain, is the difference between bothies and different mountain huts systems around the world. So if you go to New Zealand, there are dock huts and they're all mapped out. But bothies themselves are a kind of organic tradition of started in the late 1920s, 30s, abandoned places out in the hills that people started to visit, and became more formalised in the 1960s when the Mountain Bothies Association was born, to actually maintaining buildings and renovating ruins. And now there's over 80 MBA bothies in Scotland.
And in fact, they really represent a social movement as well, don't they, at the time? Because this was an opportunity for people who were working hard in the cities to actually get out into the hills and have places where they could shelter and enjoy being in the outdoors.
Yes, absolutely. After the war, mountaineering kind of took off, and Munros caught the imagination. So if you didn't have that much money, you couldn't stay in a B&B, you could go out bothing. And to be honest, I mean, they're in some stunning locations. So it's the fact that this accommodation that has been maintained and it's free to use with no booking system, it's an immense privilege for people in Scotland.
And that is an ethos that you really want to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the heroes, the Mountain Bothy Association is the organisation that looks after the vast majority of the network. Volunteers are just so proud of the work that they do. But I think at the moment there is a certain tension, because it was very much a kind of word of mouth tradition. The locations were kept secret But there is a balance between that and the guiding principle of the NBA is that they are free to use by anyone.
Yeah, because you've come under a bit of stick for that, haven't you, with your bothy
I have.
Bible, the first book that you did, which really showcased the different bothies around the place, because some people in some quarters think actually this is kind of privileged information, it shouldn't be accessible to everyone, and that actually there have been consequences for more people knowing about these places and more antisocial behaviour in bothies and so on.
The vast majority of people who actually go to bothies on that point, you know, I respect the place and other people. So it's very, very rare that there is actually antisocial behaviour. Yes.
Have you experienced that yourself in bothies?
Very, very rarely, to be honest. I think one of the things, if you've not been bothying before, is you need to have good social skills, you know. A lot of things can happen in the first couple of minutes. If someone comes into a bothy and I'm there first, I offer them a cup of tea if it's the evening and a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And obviously that, you know, that kicks off a discussion for the evening or whatever. But other people may just want to go into it. There's two rooms in a bothy. You might just squirrel yourself away in one room and let other people do their thing. So I love the conversations I've had in bothies. It's an important part of the whole experience for me. Yeah, the first book, Scottish Bothy Bible, is a reference book to these bothies, which were a kind of a kept secret, and I was conscious of the fact that I was publicising them, but I just wanted to share the knowledge that I knew and celebrate Scotland's bothies.
And in fact, on the other side of the coin is that there must be positive consequences for people actually discovering these places that they may not have known about, and actually it's an encouraging people to get outside and enjoy Scotland's wild places.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a kind of visual artist first and a writer second, and I just hadn't anticipated how many people have just come up to me and said, oh, fantastic that you've given this information, inspiring kids to go to bothies. This guy who had prostate cancer came up to me at a talk and said, oh, you know, just inspired me to get out again. And I was kind of crushed.
Yeah.
Because I just hadn't really anticipated it.
Let's go back to basics then with the bothy, because your books look gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Very enticing.
Yes, thank you.
It's just made me have the yearn, to be honest. I've been sitting looking at it thinking, I need to get out into the hills. But actually, you need to be prepared, don't you, if you're going to consider a night in a bothy, because there's not going to be much there other than a roof over your head.
Yes, they may look romantic, you know, within the book or whatever, but it is a very basic situation. Sleeping platform, increasingly bothies do have stoves. Yeah, you need to have the mindset of going camping. If you're used to that, then bothy environment's fantastic. Just take some candles, some fine food, a bit of alcohol. I pride myself on it's a real home from home. It's like even when I have a dinner party in a bothy, effectively, it's my mindset. But I am a bit of a pack horse, and I'm quite happy to carry stuff in. You wake up in the morning, there's amazing locations, just thinking, this is fantastic, you know. Even though I've been bothying for 30 years, every time I see a gable end, it's like, ooh, you know.
Still gives you the thrill.
Yeah, there's always the magic. It's just such an important part of my life. It's just great to be able to celebrate it and inspire people to go.
Well, let's talk about the book that's just coming out now. And this is 28 walks, bothy walks, and you've picked particular walks, which to me are just so enticing. How did you go about choosing them?
It was actually quite a difficult process, because the criteria was geographical spread, and wanted to get from easy to challenging walks. You know, my core market is still people who just want to go out and set a bit of a challenge. Yeah, it was difficult to narrow it down. And the way I would say is that if I was talking to you, I would pick one out for you. Probably my favourite one is going to the Bad Step on Skye or something, because that's a real challenge and it's a long way. But there's Bothy, the Lookout on Skye, which is just a coastal watch station, and the view is right over the Western Isles. And if you get a good day, you can see all the mainland up to Cape Wrath, and it's just a fantastic spot. And it's a mile and a half walk. And as you escape the crowds on Skye, amazingly, you just go a bit further than the Kerrang. So many places in Scotland, just a bit more out of the way, just a bit more effort, and you can really get a fantastic experience.
Well, that brings me back to the subject, you know, that you've been charged with, that actually this is bringing the wrong sort. Because actually, it takes a bit of an effort to get to some of these places.
Well, there's certainly the filter of being fit, but I'm very wary about what is the wrong sort. Yeah, who are the gatekeepers here? You know, who is judging who is going to come into a bothy? And I think the situation is like some people may be drinking in the evening and a family would turn up and they might go, oh, you know, I don't know about that. But the other way around, the family might go, oh, you know, people are drinking in the bothy. Who's the gatekeeper? You know, them. Who is the appropriate...
Who's in charge?
Yeah, who's the appropriate people? The NBA have a bothy code. It comes down to respect. So respect the bothy, keep it clean and take your rubbish away, but respect the other people in the bothy, be considerate. I mean, it's just common sense things. I think some of the issues in involving bothies, if everyone just showed a bit more respect, they wouldn't have arisen.
Some of the walks that really raised my heart rate when I was looking at the book were the more sort of two-day.
Yes.
I just thought, oh, this just looks fabulous. Can you describe a good one of them?
Majority of the walks are day walks, but there are five expeditions, and they're all my favourites. It's so difficult to choose. But the one we were talking about was going through Noida. It was designed that you didn't need a car. There's a lot of time, I haven't actually had a car myself, you know, short of money. You go to Maleg on the train, West Highland Line.
It's beautiful. World-class.
World-class railway. And then you get a little ferry to Inverie on Noida Peninsula. And then you walk into this bothy called Surlees, which is ahead of Loch Nevis. And it's Fjordland. You might be in New Zealand. And it's popular. And then you go up over the hill into Glendestery. There's another bothy. It's only 5 miles in the book. It's a two-day walk. But I have actually just done a five-mile day and made a three-day expedition out of it.
Obviously. Is that just so that you can take your time and enjoy the landscape?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the penalty is you have to take more food, so it's more weight. But just arrive at 2 p.m. after a lazy morning, you know, 5 mile day. You don't have to push yourself. And then you go up the Bilac and down to Glenfinnan. There's the viaduct, the Harry Potter bridge to finish. And then you get the train home. Fantastic weekend, you know.
And that was one thing that I also found appealing, was that you're very open about the fact that you're trying to make it accessible for people who might not have cars. Because in this era that we live in, when we're starting to rethink the way that we travel, we're going to have to rethink the way that we get around. Actually, using active travel and getting there by public transport is going to become key.
Yeah, I mean, I think Scotland has a pretty good public transport system. The trains and the ferries, buses are all quite regular. You can get to these places with a bit of effort on public transport. And, I could only encourage it. When I wrote the first book, most of the research was done by bike and public transport.
Simply because you didn't have a car?
Simply because I didn't have a car. It actually took 5 years to actually write the first book.
What do you do if you turn up to a bothy and there's no space? Has that happened to you?
I'm very lucky that I can go midweek out of season. I very rarely go to bothies on a Friday and Saturday night, you know. And that the issue would be in the summer months, there are probably about 10, 15 bothies that are very popular and potentially full. And they used to say that there's always space for one more, but in certain places there isn't. So you need to take a tent for a few of the most popular bothies.
And so places like where?
There's a place called Pimanik, which has had certain issues at the moment, but you certainly need a tent there. Karur in the Cairngorms, that's a very small bothy. Surlees as well, it's part of the Cape Wrath Trail, so it's a very small bothy again, but there is an amazing camping field outside. So, but in November, there's no one there.
Yeah.
And midweek, there's far fewer people. So it's a totally different experience if you don't go on a Friday or Saturday night. Yes.
One of the things I enjoyed about looking at the book was the fact that you've managed to interweave quite a lot of history, little historical facts about each bothy into the description, you know, the practical description of how you get there and so on.
I come from a geography background over the course of time. When you get a bit older, you're more interested in history, but that was one of the best things about the research for the first book, was the fact that I had the opportunity to read up about the history, and it's amazing. I started looking up some of these bothies. It didn't go past page one of Google, so I really had to root around to get some of the information. But
did that actually involve going into libraries?
I have done some pure research. Unfortunately, these things do get edited out, but it's all in my archive. But it was great because it's in a way I was kind of writing it for myself. And and so many people have said, oh, you know, I really didn't know that much about that bothy. And it just kind of encapsulated the history of the place. And there's so many old crofts and shepherd's cottages that are bothy. So there is a rich history if you can root around.
Can you think of an example?
There's a bothy near Kyleskew, right far north, Ascent, called Glen Cool. There's a house and a kind of bothy room on the gable end. And it was a school for the local kids. The family were there for... The same family were there for over 80 years. One of the sons became a poet or something. Two sons sadly died in the First World War, and there's a memorial close by. And they finally left in the 1950s, and there's still an uncle somewhere in Scarry. Yeah, I was actually going to try and interview at one point, but never quite got around to it. But yeah, there's so much information there, and it's good to be able to kind of collate it and archive it in a way.
And do you feel the sense of history when you go to these places?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I am English, but I feel like I'm an honorary Scot. So I didn't have that kind of secondary school grounding in history. But yeah, once you start researching these things, you really get the connection. I mean, obviously the Highland clearances and the battles and the droving of cattle. And yeah, you can really start to feel, you know, what it would be like to be living out there, some really tough conditions to live in.
Yeah, because I was reading recently a book which described the fact that there were people living very close to Ben McDooey. There were communities of people living there in the sort of latter half of the 1800s who only spoke Gaelic and a bit of Doric.
Yes.
And no. you just think, wow, yes, people actually lived here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously today you think about Gaelic being on the west coast of Scotland, they're now in the islands, but yeah, there was their own Gaelic in Aberdeenshire and obviously the Doric as well. So yeah, it's just that connection that, yeah, you wouldn't necessarily think about today, but it's very much there. Yeah, and that's quite remote out there.
It is, because you think when you go to these places, oh, we call them so-called wild places, but actually they're not. People have always lived in these places at some time, or been to these places at some time or other.
There's some communities out on far-flung locks. I was reading about it. There's enough people for a shinty team in the community out there, and now it's like the middle of absolute nowhere.
And how important do you think our particular access laws are in order to enable people to access areas like this?
I the right to roam, I mean, every time I'm out, I just celebrate the right to roam in Scotland. I think the most liberal access laws in the world are as good as anywhere, and I mean, I always seem to veer off the path. And when I was in the Lake District a couple of weeks ago, and obviously just everything, long footpaths and stuff, that I just want to wander. And we are so incredibly lucky, and I've met people from Canada or Germany and Holland, just can't believe you can just walk and there's no one going to shout at you. So we're incredibly privileged to be able to do that.
What do you think it is about the bothying experience that is so appealing to you and something that you want to convey to others?
I think this is the combination of being able to go to these amazing places free, and there's no booking system. It's connection to the landscape and the people you meet, and you just wake up in the morning and to these amazing views, and just thank God that you can do these kind of things in Scotland. For me personally, it's the experiences that I've had and I think about and the people I meet. Yeah, it's very close to my heart. So, and I can only encourage people to go out and just take up the bothying way.
Thanks very much to Jeff Allen, and his latest book, Scottish Bothy Walks, is out now. Just a couple of comments from listeners to BBC Radio Scotland's Out of Doors programme to share with you. Rab Russell says, I've been to many bothies over the years, whether Munro bagging or taking my bairns into the hills. The kids loved the adventures and a real fire. Miss the peat, wood smoke smells, but not the morning after the night before Sair Heads. Great memories. And Barry the Butcher Fibalita, one of our regular listeners, says, fit like the day. Ernie's bothy is part of a team with the Ballita Charitable Chiels. We did up the bothy in memory of our member, Ernie Rattray, who loved his hill walking in a dram. We now revisit the bothy for a meeting every year, restock the firewood and drink a dram or two or three. A bothy worth visiting just to read the visitor's book. And that's the Gelder Shield Bothy. If you have any bothy stories to share, then please get in touch. You can email anytime, outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. We love hearing from you and your stories about where you listen to us from around the world. And in these uncertain times, wherever you are in the world, I truly wish you good health. Thanks for listening.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.